Fire for another Totally Jim Radio special. This could be a Totally Jim Radio Rock special, Totally Jim Radio, either or. Actually, it's a little correction from the other night. The other night on Totally Jim Radio Rocks, we had had my usual Saturday night show all lined up, and what I do is I pre-taped them and put it all together. And when I went to go put it all together, it was way too long, and I couldn't get it uploaded into our system to play for everybody, so I had to cut out our interview and all the music to go along with our interview of Mr. Jeff Martin, due to the fact that it made the show run close to 4 hours, and I'm only technically allotted to go 3 hours, so I had to cut it all out. So I figured I'd do another special episode. I want to get Jeff's interview out there because it was a really good interview. Plus, I want to play a bunch of tunes from his new band, Blasted to Static, as well as some classic Jeff Martin with some Racer X and some Badlands. So, you know, without further ado, let's play a little music first. Let's kick off the show with some music. This is one off of the I wish I could talk and say that quickly and let it flow. Blasted to Static. Tune's called Suicide King. Check it out. It's off of their only album, which is available now. Here it is. Jeff Martin and Blasted to Static.
Rolling the sky like no. Jeff.
Hey, what's up?
How you doing, man?
Good. How are you? Is connection good?
Good.
Yeah,
can you hear me?
Awesome. Oh yeah.
Cool.
Where are you out?
So, you know, I'm out of Philadelphia.
Oh, okay. Okay. Killer.
Yeah, so to show you how much out of the loop I am, I didn't even realize like, you were a drummer and you had played with, like, Badlands and Stockton.
Oh, myriad.
Shanker. And, yeah, like,
yeah, that's
I
what,
didn't
I, that's what
that.
I've been doing after Racer, you know, after Racer X. That's that kept me alive, really. I played with Lynch. I did a Lynch album. I did a, God, I did albums with everybody. Pat Travers, Lynch, Kevin DeBrow. I did a myriad of,
oh, wow,
of blues albums and on and on. UFO, Michael Shanker, God, I'd have to have a list here. And I kept pretty busy. I kept busy doing a couple albums a year with somebody.
Was it all like studio work, or were you actually like a member of the bands? Or
no, I was out. You know, after we would do an album or something, we'd usually do a tour. I did some touring with Kevin DeBrow and did Quiet Riot stuff for about a year and a half, almost 2 years, and then I did a tour with George Lynch after the. We did like a, it's called Furious George, did an album and then, you know, did Dokken songs, did Lynch Mob songs and some of the songs off of that album, which at the time it was a shrapnel thing from Mike Varney where all these stars could pick out their favorite songs and then redo them. And
okay.
I ended
right.
up doing a few of those albums and they were a lot of fun because they're coming from the same stuff I was coming from. So I hardly had to do any homework, you know. Oh yeah, Queen. You know, Keep Yourself Alive. I got it. You know that sort of stuff.
Nice.
So, but yeah, I went on tour with UFO, a whole bunch of people. You know, I was out,
wow.
I was out touring around quite a bit. So, the last one I did, and I decided that's the last time I'm drumming as an '80s drummer because I'm not an '80s drummer. I came from the 70s, you know, I cut my teeth on 60s and 70s drummers and records and self-taught and did a little bit of schooling,
oh, wow.
but didn't want to do that, you know, I should have, you know, because I ended up having to learn the same goddamn rudiments anyway, so, you know, what got me back into drumming from singing. Because I dropped out of drumming in the early '80s. Greg Chason from Badlands. He was a guy that I was playing with a lot. He was a good friend in Arizona, and he talked me into coming out from behind my drums and being the lead singer of a band called Surgical Steel.
Right.
And at that time, our guitar player had just met Rob Halford at one of the clubs. So here I am, you know, one weekend, a couple weeks in of rehearsing as a lead singer alone with no drums. And I'm playing a show and Rob Halford's in the friggin' audience, you know, just like, give me a break.
Yeah, right.
And I was, you know, I was like 19 then, or, you know, I was fairly young for me, young for how I am now. That's for damn sure. And then, you know, from there I had played in a whole, you know, I'd done a whole bunch of stuff with Surgical Steel. We were supposed to get signed and then Racer X came along through Mike Varney. So, you know, I went out to LA and got that gig. And then, you know, me and Paul Gilbert were writing that album over the phone because I was still living in Phoenix, Arizona. And we all met out at Prairie Sun and did that first Racer X album. So, you know, through all the 80s, long story short, I was pretty much a singer. And Paul Gilbert put together a band for MI shows called The Electric Fence with Russ Parrish, who's Satchel in Steel Panther. And Paul
right.
and I, and we just did all 60s and 70s songs. So it recut my teeth, and this is at the end of the 80s. This is like 89, right around there. And we ended up doing five shows and learning like 147 Deep Purple, Jimi Hendrix, you know, Black Sabbath, all the old cool stuff. Beatles stuff and David Bowie stuff. So it recut my teeth into drumming again. And then the audition for Badlands came up, and I was whacking away at that for a couple weeks till I really found out I got the gig. But so that's where that all, you know, that's where my drumming came back into play after,
wow.
you know, Racer X broke up. So there was always
now
tagging on
switch.
To the end of something else. Crazy stuff.
I was going to say, making that switch, though, going from, you know, the drummer, the man behind the kit, to out in the forefront, like, did you have any idea you even had a voice to make that change? I mean, that's a huge jump.
Well, I was a drummer-singer, you know, in the old days as a drummer. I was always into Don Brewer a lot. And I never knew until I saw some videos of him. And I never got to see those guys. I loved Grand Funk Railroad way back in the day. Don Brewer did all the background vocals, but he also sang in American Band. You know, he could be a lead singer if he wanted to. But when you got Mark Farner in the band, why? You know, Mark Farner's
right,
so
right.
great. So, but he was a screaming, crazy, you know, singing drummer, and that kind of made me want to be a singer drummer. So, and I was always into Tom Jones, and later on, you know, singing the Beatles stuff. And then, you know, when Deep Purple and all that stuff came around, I was really into Ian Gillan, and I was into David Byron from Uriah Heep. And then when Rob Halford showed up on the scene with that first album, I was bit, you know, I really wanted, that's how I wanted to sing. So, but I
right.
was still drumming at that time. So, you know, I was a singer drummer guy, and Greg knew I could sing good. And he saw me on the dance floor. He knew I could dance. So he said, well, put those two together and you got a front man. So what the hell? So I did. And got sidetracked. I almost wish I would have just stayed a drummer, to tell you the truth. Singing is not easy.
I was going to say, like, if you were given one choice and you could only do one for the rest of your career, like, which would you prefer to do?
Drumming.
Wow.
Just because it's you know, singing. You know, nowadays, you've got to be on the road a lot. You know, we're not really selling CDs. We're giving that shit away so we can get people to come and see us play live and buy the t-shirts. So we're just all glorified t-shirt salesmen anymore. Or if we got, you know, the blasted to static lipstick or something, who knows, you know. And that's why, really, I hadn't really, after Racer X, I did a few things. I sang on a Priest album. I did a couple, you know, backgrounds on a couple Priest albums and did some songs here and there and backgrounds and stuff. And then I ended up doing my own solo album. But I didn't really want to be a singer as much as I wanted to be a drummer. But then, you know, one thing I do love as a singer, I love writing. I love writing melody lines and lyrics. And, you know, I have this long list of titles that I always carry around with me. And I'm always searching for titles. Somebody says something, you know, like I remember Scott Travis, you know, from Judas Priest and Racer X, he had shouted out, you know, that's heavier than a bucket of rocks. I go, bucket of rocks? Well, you know, being that's on the list, you know, something that's
right,
pleasing
right.
in my ear and is visual, I'll grab it. And I've got hundreds. So, you know, that's what I really like doing as a singer, is writing the stuff and getting and preparing it and going in the studio and doing it. That's when me and Stu got hooked up, and he sent me his stuff. And I get tapes all the time from really great guitar players, really great musicians. And they're good writers in their own sense too, but I never seemed to have been able to connect to any of them. I always connect to Paul's writing just because he's so Beatle-oriented, really. You know, even though you're talking Racer X, where do you hear the Beatles in there? Well, there's a couple of them, but really he loves melody, and I love melody. And so that's where we connected there. And then when I heard Stu's writing and his orchestration stuff that he does with keyboards for his Empires of Eden stuff, I just got bit. You know, I got hooked up with him through Bruce Bouillet and was just singing on one of his Empires of Eden album, which is a compilation of all his favorite singers that he does once a year. And he asked me to be on that. And then he sent me six more songs and sent me a bunch of money. And by the second song, I just said, hey, dude, this stuff is, I really love this stuff. Can we make a real band? And not just a project. We kind of got that from the get-go, that Blasted to Static would not be just a project. We wanted it to be a real band if we can possibly do it, which it's hard when two guys live in Australia and two guys live in America. But
right.
we look really worldly. not to make my life any harder, but there you go. That's what I did. Well, you know, the thing is just like when you fall in love with somebody, you don't pick that shit. You know, if you really fall in love with somebody, the right person, you're not making that happen. It just happens. And that's kind of what happened with me and Stu. Not to get all sappy and shit, but, you know, writing-wise and music-wise, we just connect. We just really do.
Wow. So now, what's it like, too? Like, I was always wondering, like, being that you are a drummer and now, like, you are singing again or even, like, in Racer X days, was there ever times, like, the drummer in you in your head is fighting to say, like, I want to tell the drummer to do it this way, but I don't want to step on his toes?
Yeah. You know, everybody, I'm ADHD, so everything's rolling by and I'm always blurting out ideas and shit. You know, if you want an idea guy in the room, I'm pretty good, you know, but I'm very obnoxious too. I'm pretty sure Paul couldn't stand it anymore because, one, I didn't play guitar very well. I played bass a little, but getting my ideas out, I'd always either have to hum them and stuff. But, yeah, I was always, you know, if I heard something, hey, why don't you try this? Or, you know, let me sit down. Let me show you this. And oddly enough, I've been playing with enough cool people that they would let me do that. And, you know, they'll take it as a grain of salt or they'll take that idea. And sometimes that'll make them think differently and go off in their own, you know, direction in a different, better way. But, yeah, you know, I blurt it out. And I do have to do that because it's almost like when you're ADHD, you're ideas that are popping up and they're constantly popping up. It's almost like a goddamn slot machine.
Right.
If I don't tell somebody or blurt it out and record it, it's gone like a fart in the wind. I mean, the next idea is in there and it's gone. Unless there's a few melody ideas that I'd had and song ideas that I still have that are so strong that aren't gone and I don't have them recorded, but there's very few of those, man. I lose train of, and it hasn't happened yet in this interview, but I lose train of thought of where I'm going with an idea when I'm talking to somebody. And what the hell is this guy talking about? So, you know, that whole thing, you know, being a drummer, I've been really lucky to have other drummers when I'm the singer and I come up with ideas or, you know, as of late, the last 8 years, I've had a really cool band up here in Lake Tahoe where I live called Fortress. And, you know, back in the day when I was trying to be signed and be the real thing, I had this funny thing where I did not want to listen or try to connect myself with anybody. And that includes Judas Priest. So I stopped listening to a lot of music or trying to sing like other singers because I just wanted to sing like me. And in the last 8 years or so, I've got with this band and we're just like, instead of bowling, we get together and play heavy metal songs. And
nice.
It's a lot of fun because we play all Maiden, all old stuff first, all Maiden, all Judas Priest, all Black Sabbath, you name it. If it's heavy and 70s and old and, you know, not much too much early 80s stuff other than some of the Priest stuff, you know, the Screaming for Vengeance stuff or stuff like that. But so that, you know, that's really gotten my chops back together as a singer. And you know, you are what you are. It's Popeye the Sailor Man out there, really. You know, I'd always been tagged as Rob Halford when we were trying to get signed with Racer X. But all in all, I do some good screaming here and there and stuff like that. But I don't. His tone and his mask sound is really hard to recreate. You know, they say Ripper Owens sounds like him. He does in the Painkiller voice, but I don't think he sounds like him at all. He sounds like a regular guy from Ohio, if you ask me, when he's singing
right.
in the midsection voice, you know. Very few people can make his tone, you know. And so you know, it's been fun try to learn how to sing like Bruce and Dio and all this stuff. Dio's impossible. And it's widened who I am and what I am vocally, I think. But it really hasn't changed my style much, which is kind of neat to know, and shows I wasted a lot of good music and time back in the day that I could have been listening to.
You just mentioned Dio. Did you happen to see the Dio hologram this past weekend made it appear?
I would have probably just broken down in tears. I heard it looked like he just was on stage. Now, I haven't seen it, but did you see it?
They just put video clips out earlier. It's the first I've seen of it. It's pretty wild, but I just kind of, like, weird to think that they're going to do, like, a whole tour with that now.
Might as well. He was the greatest.
Yeah.
Who knows? Maybe we'll have a baseball game. We'll have a baseball game pretty soon with the Giants featuring Babe Ruth.
Yeah, right? That'd be pretty crazy.
That would be nuts. Well, at least they have the pre-planned home runs and stuff like that. So we don't have to wait a whole game to see everybody get stranded. Sorry, I'm a baseball fan and I'm frustrated right now. I don't know how many times we load the bases with no outs and not get anybody in. Jesus. Somebody shoot me. No wonder Bruce Bochy's in the hospital. I'm a Giants fan, sorry.
So,
that's
all right.
Now, is it a real video of Dio that has been hologrammed, or is it a computerized mock-up? Do you know?
I think it's computerized.
Oh, okay. That would be weird. I would rather have them take some of his best shows. But, of course, it's really hard to 3D that, you know, because you don't have every angle. You'd have to have him shot from every angle to do that properly. But, that's one singer and believe me, I got to tour with him for 2 months. I was playing in a band called the Black Symphony, and we had a fairly good German record label that brought us out to Germany, Belgium, Norway, Sweden. We did 2 months, and I got to see Dio for 2 months sing almost every day. And I was in that little cage in front of him. And he's otherworldly. Vocally, he's otherworldly. There's nobody that can touch his emotion, let alone his lyrical content, what he's singing about. He was the most positive, reinforced lead singer ever. Like the song I mean it's all about becoming yourself and being positive and growing and nurturing and becoming the best you can be. All that stuff was from such a Catholic background, even his devil stuff. I mean, he was just giving you the choice. He wasn't promoting any satanic anything. He's just showing you that there's this other black side and here's the light side. So did Alice Cooper. I mean, but he was, if he was in another time or era, I think he could have been Napoleon, because, you know, if you piss that guy off, look out, you know, he come down you like a house full of bricks caving in. He was just, he had this persona of unbelievable. His voice was his character, really. That's how he was.
Right.
But I tell you what, he was the sweetest guy. And, I mean, I walked into the room, Jeff, how you doing? Jeff Martin, right? He knew my songs. He knew me. And I'm just sitting there going, you know who the hell I am? What's that? There's something wrong.
Oh, wow.
I got this huge picture. We were doing laundry in Brussels, I think. And, of course, he had the number 13 dryer. And I was right next to him. And I had to get a picture of us doing our laundry, our stinky socks together. You know, you gotta have the pictures of when you're at the bottom doing the crap instead of, you know,
right,
at the gig with the pints. But yeah, that his voice, I can't recreate his voice at all. I mean, I'm just a completely different kind of singer than he is. And you know, he wasn't a tall guy. So, you know, a lot of the untall guys, I don't know if it's because of the timbre of their voice and the size of their vocal cords. You know, they're just in a different range category, and they don't have to.
Right.
If I try to sing like Dio, I sound like Halford. I'm screaming, you know. And he sounds all full and husky and unbelievable. And if I try to get there, I'm all like falsetto-y, and it's just it's unbelievable. You know, so that's why he should be a hologram and show people his greatness, because there's plenty of metalheads out there having kids right now that will never be able to see Ronnie James Dio on stage. And
right.
Maybe now they can and understand what their moms and dads are telling them, you know. This guy was unbelievable. Everything his hands do,
yeah.
His voice does. Unbelievable.
Absolutely.
So anyway, that's enough about him. He's got a check.
So,
he's got a check in the mail. He's got a check in the mail to me for all that good stuff.
Yeah, right.
Like he needs it.
So with Blasted Static, though, the one thing I saw, I think it was a student had mentioned that you guys, you're not like sticking to one genre, like. You could be sounding like Sabbath in one song and Queen in the next. Do you like
well,
it that way to be able to have that freedom
that.
To bounce back and forth?
Yeah, well, you know, getting back to what I was saying before about songs from the 70s, you know, listen to the album by Priest, Sad Wings of Destiny, or Sin After Sin. You'll have, Victim of Changes, and then you'll have Last Rose of Summer. You know, that was a time period when, especially with Black Sabbath, you would have two heavy songs and then you'd have some noodling with Echo and going into Changes or Fluff or a number of really laid back, cool songs that totally changed your disposition and your ears from being pummeled by heavy music, you know? And when that next heavy song would come up, you'd be pummeled all over again. That is what we're trying to do more than anything, is we're just trying to have diversity in cleaning your palate, you know? There's so many bands out there that just, they're just going fucking on 10 the whole time. And where do you go from 10? You can say the old joke, go to 11, but really, I mean, if you just keep playing heavy song after heavy song, you lose it after a while, I think. You need, just like with a good meal, you need to have a little lemon sorbet before you have another, you know, course in the meal. And that makes that next course taste all that much better. So that's more
Absolutely.
Or less what we're doing. We tried to take the chemistry of an old Queen album or an old Black Sabbath album or an old Judas Priest album and take what they did and try to recreate that. Not so much copying their music, but copying the chemistry of the feels of the songs, the kinds of songs they were writing. And I'm hoping we're going to do even more of that. I'm just about going to be doing a video here for Lovesick Blue at one of the most haunted places in the United States. It's called the Washoe Club in Virginia City. And it's going to be a really cool, if the video comes out like I like, it's going to be cool. But instead of going for another heavy song, we're going for that one as our next video. You know, we've got two heavy songs out already. Well, we've got kind of a Priesty heavy song, which is called Suicide King. And which is an ode to, all those crazy buggers that go race out at the Isle of Man and burst into flames. Because I'm kind of a motorcycle enthusiast if I'm not watching baseball. And then the other one is called The Hammer, which is kind of just a straight hard rock song, really. It's got a good groove. And it's just a song about getting up in the morning, looking in the mirror and realizing, holy crap, I'm going to die soon. I'm getting really old, you know, and every day you wake up and you hear another nail being hammered into your coffin. So we got those two done. So now we're going to lay it back a little bit and do this one called Lovesick Blue, which is kind of like reminiscing on all your past loves that you have lost, starting with the you know, the girl's 8 years old that you shoved a frog down the top of their dress, you know, that sort of thing. So I'll be super, and all these ghosts of these girls will be dancing around me, and they'll come out, you know, different ones. And at the end, they're going to drag me up the boot hill with a chain around my neck and throw me down at the front of my grave. It ought to be fun. It'll be light entertainment for all.
You guys have a big supporter in Whitfield Crane from Ugly Kid Joe, it seems.
Yeah, Whit is a really good friend of mine. Actually, I met Whit through my band up here, Fortress, because the two brothers that are in Fortress, Mike and Dave Hatchett, they are like some of the first guys to be signed by Burton Snowboards. They are snowboard. If you ask any snowboard guy, they'll go, yeah, Dave Hatchett, or climbers. They're rock climbers. They're snowboarders. So Whit was a crazy snowboarder. And of course they had that band going before I met them. And Whit was kind of, he would come up and do shows with him. Whit just nails, loves to do Priest, but he really loves to do AC/DC. He can sound like Bon Scott, like you can't believe. It's unbelievable. I met Whit through that, and we do songs together. Whenever he's singing, he usually likes me to play drums because, you know, we have a good drummer, but, you know, I'm a little more pro, and I hit pretty hard and find what he calls is the elephant shuffle, where, you know, the elephant sways back and forth with his trunk swinging. You get that kind of groovy swing in your feel. He loves that. So, but yeah, he's a great guy, and he's been really busy as of late doing a lot of stuff. So with Another Animal and, I think Ugly Kid Joe is doing another thing.
Right.
And we don't play that many Ugly Kid Joe songs, really. He doesn't want to do those.
Huh. He wants to do different. He wants to
relive
the past with the other.
And he wants to, yeah, right, exactly.
Have some fun.
Cool. And how about, I was wondering, too, like, when Jakey Lee was putting together his latest project, Red Dragon Cartel, did he ever get hold of you, maybe to play drums for him?
Oh, God,
or?
No.
We're saying
the last thing that Greg just recently told me that he'll never play in a band with me again. I have no idea what I've done. It's just one of those things. I'll tell you one thing. I saw him at the NAMM show, and it was the happiest I've ever seen that guy. He was just smiling the whole time and having a good time up there, having whiskey and kicking ass. So, you know, good for him.
Huh.
Yeah, we had something good together musically. You know, I really like playing with Jake because he's a real percussive guitar player.
Right.
As in, you know, he stays in time with some of his faster stuff, like when he does, you know, and I can do like, you know, I can do the riffs with his riffs.
Right.
And he's got some key signature things that he does that I know that it's coming, you know, that he's going to end up at this spot, and I can, you know, end up doing the riff with him here and there. And everybody looks at us like, wow, did they have that worked out? And of course we didn't, you know, we had two songs, Rumblin' Train and The Devil Stomp, which could be the normal album, amount of time, or it could be 15 to 20 minutes long. We just go off on these really cool Zeppelin-esque sort of jams. And, you know, you're definitely going to learn how each other plays after a year of touring, you know, Voodoo Highway. We're out there on the ground back and forth in the United States three times. I think we went back and forth and up into Canada.
Wow.
And, so, yeah, the music part with that band was great. The business part was awful. You know, there was all sorts of crap going on with management, and the label was not backing us that well. And, you know, they had heard inklings that Ray was sick and didn't want, you know, who knows why. But, you know, we had the one thing that Ugly Kid Joe had Cats in the Cradle, right? Right. Or coming out around that time, or a little before that time, maybe. But we had the song Fire and Rain, which is kind of in the same genre. And it's a, I just listened, somebody put it on Facebook, and I listened to it again. Wow. Everybody said that should have been a hit, you know, and really pushed, but the label never pushed it. And even Ahmed Ertegun, the head of Atlantic Records, when he first heard the band, and I wasn't the drummer in the band, Eric Singer was at the time, he heard them play that in New York, and he instantly said, that's a hit. You guys got to record that and put that out. But Jason Flom was running the show at that time, and he wasn't pushing Racer X too much. He was busy with Skid Row and a couple other bands.
Right. Wow.
And then when they dropped us, they ended up picking up Cry of Love, which is one of my favorite bands. And it's really kind of a Badlands sort of band, really. Same sort of thing. Little more southern sounding maybe, but yeah, it was weird. Maybe they had that in the works anyway, and that's why they dropped us. But we were doing Dusk at that time, and that the Dusk album was just demos that we had done.
Right.
And, you know, when we were dropped, those tapes disappeared, and when Ray died, those tapes magically reappeared. That's pretty much us. That's us playing each song one time in a room together with a 24-track mixing board. So there's no overdubs. There's no anything. I mean, even all of Ray's stuff and that stuff, he didn't even have half his lyrics done. And you can't tell. There's some Japanese kid that, you know, made the liner notes in the album and wrote all the lyrics. He wrote half the songs lyrically. That's funny. Crazy stuff.
Wow.
But that just shows you how great Ray was. Ray was really good at this thing called Jibba Jab, where he put a word on the front and a word on the back, and everything in the middle was vowels and stuff. It was just, I was going to tell the sensation, I'm going to get that. You know, you just, what the hell? You know? And a lot of times it would be so rhythmically cool sounding that he'd have a hard time finding words that would fit with it cool. So anyway, that's a little
wild.
Of that.
That is wild.
But no, the Blasted, the Static stuff we're pounding. You know, we're trying to get some management backing or somebody, a booking agent that can get us out there. Because, like I said, we want this to be a real band. But until we can get out there and tour, we're trying to get some numbers.
Right.
And this is me, you know, I don't know if I can say, but waiting for numbers on CDs, well, that doesn't really matter anymore. But, you know, trying to get a promoter who will back it and bring us to Europe. I have Russ Parrish from Steel Panther had said that he would take us out on a leg of their tour, but they've already done, they've got somebody for Europe, and they just did Australia a while back, and I was hoping to get on that one. Because really, when it's all comes and said and done, I just put this band together because I've never been to Australia. I just want to get to Australia.
cool.
That move is just trying to get a promoter to get us on some kind of a tour to get us out there, you know, and have us push the stuff a little bit so we can sell some T-shirts.
Yeah. Would you prefer to be able to tour Europe first or the States?
I would. Personally, because that would mean that I'm in Europe and eating some really killer food, and you know, like Germany. I'm German, mostly German, and when I'm over there, I just feel like I'm home. And you know, like I said, I'm into motorcycles. I'm into fixing up really old, cool English motorcycles, and making them perfect again. But that's what Germans do. They like stuff perfect. And everything in order, get it in order. And every time I'm over there, you know, even the goddamn cobbles in the streets are perfect. You know, and they've been there for like 200 years. You know, none of the cars have scratches on them. I mean, it's just, it's a perfect world. Crazy.
Right.
How can you bomb the hell out of somebody and then they come back like that? I don't know.
Perfect.
Perfect.
They come back perfect.
Yes. No, it's just really orderly and clean and beautiful. The food's good. The people are all walking around instead of eating crummy food and getting fat. And I don't know. You know, it's just. So, yes, Europe. Get me to Europe. Get me to Japan. I'd love to go back to Japan again and play. I did a lot of that when I did a lot of Paul Gilbert's solo albums in the beginning of his solo career. And played many times over in Japan and Taiwan and, you know, all these eastern countries. And would love to get back there. But definitely would love to get back there with something that, you know, me and Stu and I have worked on this for almost 2 years, writing and getting stuff together. And you know, it was through he was doing some things and I was doing some things. And I'm coming out on two other albums this year that are drum albums, which one is called Blindside Blues Band Journey to the Stars. And that was it had been released. And that's a really 70s blues rock album. And then the other one is not out yet. We're just mixing it, but it's Rev Jones, the bass player in Blasted Ecstatic. And he was the bass player in MSG and played with Leslie West. And he's also with Steelheart. He wrote a bunch of songs after he went through a kind of a crummy divorce. And man, these songs are just amazing. And he's singing on it. And I'm playing drums on that as well. And they sound like Mr. Big meets something very odd. And it has some really off-canter, almost insane-sounding lyrics. His melody lines go all over the place, insanely all over the place. And he's the only guy that could get away with it. And I'm not saying they're out of key or anything like that. It's just amazingly something that nobody else would think of. So that's kind of cool that he has, and if it does halfway good, you know, he'll have something that is truly his own. So, and the guitar player we have in that, his name's Jim Dolfa, and he sounds like a young Paul Gilbert. He sounds like Paul when I first was writing with Paul and the first album. It's crazy. Even his tone, but mostly his how he chooses notes So anyway, I got those two going on, and then of course Blasted. But those are more. We're just out there trying to, you know, stick our toe in the water and get another album out there. But the Blasted the Static album is definitely a real band.
See, I mean, you're really keeping busy on both ends of the musical spectrum of yourself.
Well, I'm trying, you know. Like I've always said about the music business, you just put another chip on the roulette wheel of life, you know, and see if the damn marble lands on your spot. Because after being in Racer X, and we were just crushing it on the strip and all through LA, but we couldn't get arrested by a decent deal, a decent label, and get some real money thrown at us and some real promotion and touring. You know, people were scalping $100 a ticket to come in and see. We're talking 86, 87. They were scalping $100 to get in and see us at the country club at a show where the Columbia Records director was coming to see us. And Warrant was opening up for us. He signs Warrant, not us. And, I don't think the people were scalping for Warrant. They were scalping, you know, to get in to see us. We had just, I think it just done the live album or something like that. So, I've been to the mountaintop so many times and almost put my hand up there where, you know, and, you know, no one can really say when you're in the music business, it's hard to say that I've made it to, you know, you're always fighting and struggling to get things, to run by themselves. But
right.
I hear tell that once you do get that ball rolling down the other side of the mountain, it picks up speed and it's hard to keep up with it. But I've never really gotten to that point. It usually comes back down the same side. It usually comes back down the same side. I just pushed it up and then runs me over.
Right. Do you think with the Racer X being being part of like the shrapnel label and that whole, you know, back in Paul's early days being that guitar shredder, do you think that hurt the band more than helped it in the long run?
No. I don't think so at all. You know, that's one of the things that some of the labels were picking out. Oh, your guitar players play too fast and you sound like Rob Halford. You know, they'll find something about anything if they just don't like you
right.
and just don't think that you're, you know, the thing is when I heard how Metallica, you know, was in LA and they were trying to beat down the, you know, the pathway and make it, they were smart enough to say, well, screw this. We don't want to wear hairspray, even though they did a little bit. And really,
right.
Racer X wasn't a hairspray band. Not really. We should have got out of there. We should have moved, and I would have been way happier up in the Bay Area. And John Eldoretti actually lived up in Nevada, up close to the Bay Area. And you know, we played up there at the Stone a lot. We played at the Omni a lot and just had really great success. But I think if we could have got out of that whole, we're playing songs for chicks and our hair is all stuck up and we're wearing spandex sort of vibe, we could have done a lot better. But mainly we needed to just get some decent management. We never got that. And, you know, there's a whole list of reasons, but, you know, they'll always pick out something. And, you know, when you're in a band with really fantastic musicians who are all kicking ass, we better pick on the singer. Because unless you're Axl Rose and you're just dominating the microphone, they're gonna find something. They're gonna find the weakest link. I guess it was me.
Oh man, that's all wrong.
Well, it's just the way it goes. But you know,
but now you got.
Of course, I should have figured it out right then and went to med school or something, but I didn't. You know why? Because some people, if you really are a musician, and I can call myself a musician, I can call myself a musician because I've just been trying to do this for so long and trying to make it for so long and trying to, now that I look back, it's just having something that somebody gives a shit about, you know, having music that real people really care about. And, in a couple of my interviews recently, some of the people after, and these are people who are big Racer X fans, they listen to my solo album and then they listen to this Blasted to Static album and they said, we never realized what a big part you are of the sound of Racer X. And I just said to them, hold on, I got to go to the bathroom and have a cry. You know, because it was a three-ring circus of fantastically unbelievable dancing, you know, dancing horses. And, you know, what I'm getting at is Paul was so unbelievable and John Eldoretti was so unbelievable on bass and Bruce was unbelievable and Scott Travis, he's a priest now and has been the longest of any drummer. They were such unbelievable musicians that it was hard to keep up, you know. It was a wielding circus soleil of notes and musicianship, so. And that's what blew a lot of people away when we'd play live and they'd have to tell their friends and then their friends would come, you know, we had an old saying in Racer X, you know, the front row with the at least two back was nothing but guys with their arms folded. And what they were doing, they were all one, they were all guitar players, not many drummers,
right.
Not that many singers, but they were all guitar players and their arms were folded. Just trying to figure out what these guys were doing or saying, show me what you got sort of stuff. You know, we call them the Isles of Folded Men. And, you know, that was kind of part of our thing we had to put up with. But, you know, in the meantime, I was trying to lyrically write songs that meant something more than just that, you know. Songs about depression, songs about love, and, you know, normal stuff that real people have to deal with.
Right.
So, not just giving it the shred value of I'm going to rip your face off and, you know, piss down your existence. Although, and the thing is Paul did that so easily that it was almost comical at the ease that he could play that way, and that was part of the the comic relief of the band, really, because we would do that stuff so easily. And having a name like Racer X, which is named after a comic book or a cartoon hero, kind of fit really well. I'm sure a lot of people didn't get that, but we in the band, I think, did. At least I did. I always thought that was kind of a neat angle for the band, and we should go that way. That's why I kind of brought in all the overabundance of color, and I did this whole black light thing on the stage with all neon, and, you know, you look like you're watching a Saturday morning cartoon review, you know, except it was shredding your face off and screaming. Oh, boy.
Well, so with Lipstick to Static now, where can everybody get the album? Where can everybody find out about you guys?
Well, go to blastedtostatic.com and you can get a whole bunch of information from that. But we're on Spotify. We're on iTunes. You know, it's the whole gambit there. You can go on Amazon and get it there. If you go to blastedtostatic.com, they have the sites where you can order the album. I hear tell we're going to be on vinyl very soon, and the vinyl will have the CD in it also.
Nice.
And the artwork, you know, as all my solo albums, I've always had a lot to do with, you know, either small ideas or ideas on artwork on a lot of albums, some of the Racer X stuff, but definitely on my solo album and a lot on this. I had a great guy out of New York who helped me do all my green screen shots. That's my daughter on the cover, who is the biggest metalhead in the world that I know. She's more metal than I'll ever be. She just got back from the Warped Tour, had full access passes, and, you know, she's gone to college for being a photojournalism, and hopefully will be moving on to DC Records as their go-to girl to go out to places and interview guys and do the photos and do the whole thing. So, that's where you can get all that stuff. And you know, it's nice to have the CD. It's a digipack, and so it folds out. It's got a booklet in it. It's got all the lyrics, which, you know, the lyrics to me, I like these new lyric clips that are going up because you're forced to see the lyrics that I write and understand what the song is about, because usually it's not what you think a lot of times, and it can touch you a little more if you really really understand what's going on.
Right. Wow. Cool. Well, Jeff, this has been awesome.
Great. Glad to talk to you. I wish I was there right now, because it's just after lunchtime, and I would love a Philly spoon. Tell me what, a real one.
See, well, that you guys had to come to Philly, and we go get cheesesteaks.
That's what I'm talking. Yeah, right. You get them out here. They call them that, but it should be called the Philly steak bootstrap, because they're not it. I've had those real
ones.
Well,
that's the thing. When you go somewhere and they have to call it a Philly cheesesteak, it's not a Philly cheesesteak.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Right.
Cool.
Well, cool.
So,
awesome.
Before I let you go, if I can just get you to cut an ID real quick. This is Jeff Martin, and you're listening to Totally Driven Radio.
Hello, this is Jeff Martin from Blasted to Static, and you are listening to Totally Driven Radio.
Awesome.
Is that right?
Jeff, thanks so much, man, and good luck with
everything. Thank you, brother. Okay, thanks.
Take care.
Bye.
Wake up in a storm. the Valley of Darkness, for he truly is his brother's keeper and the finder of lost children. And I will strike down upon thee with great vengeance and furious anger those who would attempt to poison and destroy my brothers. And you will know my name is the Lord when I lay my vengeance upon thee.
Martin, there's Blasted Static, there's Racer X, there's Badlands, there it all goes. We kicked off the show with Suicide King, then we played the interview with Jeff, and then we played The Hammer, also from Blasted Static, then we played some Racer X with Street Lethal, and then we played The Last Time from Badlands, and then we played Devil's Preacher. So there you go. Good stuff. It's it's good, like classic, nice hard rock and metal. Love it. Totally love it. So there you go. There's Jeff Martin. I want to thank Jeff for this great interview. And everybody for tuning in, checking out. Make sure you check out Blasted Ecstatic. Support them. Find them. Hopefully they'll be coming to a town near you and pick up their album. It's out now. You can grab it on iTunes or wherever music is sold. Look for it. Get it. Buy it. Support the band. They need your support.
60 seconds.
And music needs you too. So, all right. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Don't forget, go to totallydrivenentertainment.com for up-to-date info and news, or totallydriventv.com. Take your pick. It all leads you to the same place, or even totallydrivenradio.com. Also, look for us all over the web as we're on. You can subscribe to us on iTunes, Spreaker, Block Talk Radio. Look for us also on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter. We're everywhere. Go find us, support us, follow us, like us, love us. Make us grow and become totally driven. All right, everybody. Thanks again. Bay Ragney here signing out. Stay driven. Until next time. See ya.